and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and this week we bring you a hard-boiled insurance detective with expensive tastes and a big expense account. His work takes him to many exotic locations, and this week we have him investigating a slow boat from China. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, was a series that ended up being the last dramatic show on radio in the early 1960s. This week, we present two episodes from the beginning of the series when Johnny Dollar was played by Charles Russell as a freewheeling playboy who was a very big tipper. There's a lot of action in this exotic locale. Enjoy yours truly, Johnny Dollar, Slow Boat from China, first broadcast February 25th, 1949 on CBS.
The Columbia Broadcasting System presents Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. The next half hour has its baggage packed to take a trip with America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At insurance investigation, he is just an expert. At making out his expense account, he is an absolute genius. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Oriental West, Cargo Bonding Company, San Francisco. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during my investigation of delayed cargo aboard the SS Shanghai Wayfarer, or the case of the slow boat from China. Expense account, item one, $181.52. Plane fare from Hartford to San Francisco in answer to your urgent call. Expense account, item two, $3. Lunch on Fisherman's Wharf in answer to my stomach's urgent call. Item three, $1.20. Cab fare to your office.
Dollar, my name is Fundy. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting you before.
And may I say it's a pleasure meeting you. It's a rough trip. I'm glad it's over.
Over? Oh, it's just begun. Here, Dollar. This is your plane ticket to Singapore.
Singapore?
Hmm?
You know, Fundy, I had a choice.
Really?
To come to San Francisco to see you, or to take a case in Boston. A nice old lady on Beacon Hill clubbed her husband with an early American bed warmer. But no, rather than New England broiled lobster, I'd rather have San Francisco cracked crab. Now, all of a sudden, Singapore. May I ask why?
Yes. We've bonded against the delay $120,000 cargo of raw tin aboard the Shanghai Wayfarer. The ship was due to sail from Singapore 3 weeks ago. Still out there, tied up in the Tanjong Pagar dock.
What's the delay? Mutinous, mechanical, or just plain mysterious?
I'm afraid it's a little of each. We flew an expediter out there 10 days ago to see what he could do. All the satisfaction we've had from this man, Harrison, is a report that since his arrival, the Wayfarer's main shaft has burned out, her freshwater pumps have fouled up, and her steering machinery has gone on the fritz.
You don't need an insurance investigator. You need a good plumber.
Well, maybe you're right. But anyhow, you'll find our man Harrison, William Harrison, at the Crown Colony Hotel. He'll fill in the details. Dollar, you have only a matter of hours after you hit Singapore to get the Shanghai Wayfarer started on its way. I must impress upon you the fact that any delay after that will cost this company $2,500 a day.
Well, all I can promise is the old college try. Times like this, I wish I'd gone to college. Well, anyway, I'm in the right town to make my last night in the States a good one. A few drinks with the right gal at the top of the mark. A few rare steaks at Alfred's. A few dances to Freddie Martin's music at the St. Francis. A few moments alone in the arms.
Dollar.
Huh?
That sounds mighty good. But your plane leaves in 2 hours.
2 hours? Well, I guess I'll have to do without the drinks, the dinner, and the dancing. Expense account item four, $120. Lost in the course of teaching fellow passenger how to play poker. My mother warned me never to play cards with strangers on trains or steamships. I wish she'd included airplanes. You'd implied, Fundy, that the situation smelled. Well, you should have caught a whiff of the city, especially the native sections through which I had to pass on my way to the Crown Colony Hotel. I found it on Anson Road. I found myself a room. I also found William Harrison's room.
Harrison. Hey, Harrison.
But I didn't find Harrison. All I found was a calling card from my old friend Trouble. Wherever Harrison was, he didn't want to be, and he left a trail of broken furniture and blood to prove it. I searched the dresser. Shirt size, 14. Socks, 9. That meant Harrison was a small man. I went to the bathroom, shaving brush and toothbrush still wet, indicating that he'd been there not too many hours before I arrived. Then I tried the wastebasket. In addition to one large glob of used chewing gum, an empty cigarette package, and some old Kleenex, I found a swizzle stick with a name on it. The Collier Key Bar. All that meant was that Harrison had a head cold and had been trying to cure it with Singapore slings. But at least I knew where he'd been drinking it. The Collier Key Bar looked out on the harbor. It was dark enough inside to give a man a good excuse for drinking nightcaps at noon.
Your pleasure, sir?
Say, how are you on mixed drinks?
Mixed drinks? Governor, if I don't know how to make them, I look them up in the book. If they ain't in the book, I fake them. Now, what will it be?
Straight bourbon.
Right, Joseph.
Oh, hey, bartender.
Yes, sir.
Are you by any chance acquainted with an American named Harrison?
Harrison, sir?
Yeah. He arrived in Singapore about 10 days ago. Small man with a cold in his head.
Oh, Harrison. Sure, I know him right enough. He's been coming in every night with a chief engineer from one of the ships in port.
Oh, yeah? What ship is that?
Well, the Shanghai Wayfarer, I think.
Oh, the Shanghai Wayfarer. What's this engineer's name?
Yeah, now, hold on. I ain't getting him into any trouble, am I? He's a nice chap, he is. A handsome tipper.
This handsome?
My governor, $20 American, why? Compared to you, sir, Mr. Frank Moore is downright tight-fisted. Well, how about that? I've done it. I let Mr. Frank Moore's name slip right now. My missus is right. For a little man, I've got a ruddy large mouth.
Expense account, item 5. Rickshaw fare to the Tanjung Pagar docks, 10 cents. Tip to Pony Boy, $1. The ships moored fore and aft of the Shanghai Wayfarer were busy stuffing the pungent treasures of the East into their deep steel pockets. The only sign of life aboard the Shanghai Wayfarer was the right hand of the burly gangway watch. It was holding a knife with a 6-inch blade and slicing thin slivers off a plug that looked more like tar than tobacco. As a gangway watch, he might have been fine. But as a reception committee, he was no Elsa Maxwell.
That's far enough, mate. There's nobody aboard and there's nobody coming aboard.
It's all right with me. All I want's a little information. Where can I find your chief engineer, Frank Moore?
You come to the wrong place. By the icebox over at the Singapore police. They fished him out of the harbor this morning, stabbed to death.
Oh? Have you any idea who did it?
They're holding some dame he's been playing around with. No, I don't know her name.
Have they got anything else?
Listen, mate, my job is to guard the ship, not answer questions.
Okay, okay, have it your way. Oh, watch out for pirates. The British chief inspector, Singapore police, gave me everything except an invitation to tea. But unfortunately, he never even heard of Harrison. He took me into the morgue, and a look at Frank Moore's body told me nothing I didn't already know. He'd been stabbed, all right. And whoever had killed him had sunk him with a hole in one. As for his personal effects, his Maritime Union card confirmed the fact that he was indeed the chief engineer of the Shanghai Wayfarer. A stack of crisp American $20 bills in his wallet made me wonder whether he hadn't been picking up a little extra pin money for delaying the departure of his ship. And finally, a photograph that made me admire the late Mr. Moore's taste in women. Whoever it was that said, "Never the twain shall meet," should have met her. She was half caste and all woman. Her picture was inscribed to Frank Moore. "Yours forever, Chandra." From the inspector, I learned two more things. One, the fact that the police had already questioned and released her. And two, her business address, the Wardlaw Bar on Malay Street.
Hello, Mr. Young. You like a midnight sing song, girl?
No. The only girl I want to hear sing songs is Dinah Shore. Go on, beat it, will you? Oh, hey, wait a minute.
Yes, Stuart?
Where's Chandra?
Oh, she go across to Penang tonight. You buy me a drink, mister? We sit right over.
Get it, Monja. Get it, Monja. Oh, Monja, you. I put you
went home to stay out one night in your own coffin.
Complete with stab wounds, no doubt.
Why you say that? Why you ask for Chandra?
I'm a stranger in town. I can't find a local chapter of the Lonely Hearts Club. So shall we find a quiet table?
I don't know you.
No, but you knew Frank Moore. That gives us something in common.
Over there is one.
Yeah. This doesn't sound like a very quiet table to me.
In Singapore, you will learn whispers stand out in the quiet. They disappear in the noise.
I'll bow to the wisdom of the native guide. But who said I had any secrets?
You talk about Frank Moore, so I know. If you do not have secrets to give, there must be secrets you like to learn. But I tell the police everything I know, which is nothing. No, you are disappointed in me.
No, not at all. You make good scenery. And I'll bet there's quite a story that goes with you.
You find me interesting.
I'm a man.
Why do you come to me?
Well, there were two places I could go for what I'm after. And you're much prettier than the SS Shanghai Wayfarer. I'm looking for a lead on a man named Harrison. Your murdered friend Frank Moore knew him, so figures you know him.
You are wrong. I do not know him. I do not even know you.
Oh, well, that's soon fixed. My name is Johnny Dollar.
Your name is nice.
Especially the salad part, huh?
You are very droll, but I see when you make this joke there is no smile on your face. You are worried about your friend, Mr. Harrison?
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe he was lonely tonight. Maybe he does not want you to find him.
Ah, you certainly make me feel much better. How about a drink?
I never drink before midnight.
All right, then I'll wait. We'll have one then.
All right, Johnny. But we don't have it here. We go to my house. There it is cool on the river. And there it is quiet. So we do not have to whisper.
Midnight must have been invented for Singapore, and her house must have been invented for midnight. Only one thing looked out of place. Up on the wall was a souvenir of Chandra's war effort, a real American baseball bat, a Louisville Slugger. And on it was written, "Remember the U.S. Marines." Everything else in the place was soft. The lights, cushions, and Chandra.
It is nicer to drink here, no?
Yeah, may I say, it's a mite intoxicating without a drink. But I wish the boys back in my high school senior class could see me now.
What do you mean?
In the graduation annual, they predicted I'd be a bookkeeper.
Oh, I do not understand you.
And neither did the boys in my senior class.
Johnny, please say things I can understand. I want to know you better.
Maybe if I stop talking altogether, you'll get to know me better.
Johnny.
I stopped talking, but I didn't stop thinking. When I'd mentioned Harrison to Chandra earlier, she said maybe he was lonely tonight. If she didn't know him or anything about him, I wondered how she knew that he was missing tonight and not for a couple of days, or maybe even longer. Besides, the boyfriends of women like her don't keep secrets. I still assumed that if Frank Moore had known Harrison, Chandra had known Harrison. I also assumed that she'd spidered me into her parlor for purposes other than social. And that notion was seconded soon after I had it, when somebody kicked the door open.
He sends you, Johnny, darling.
The two boys in the door were not from Western Union. And ugly as they were, Chandra left my side to join them, which made me think that maybe my senior class had been right. Looking at that trio, six eyes and two guns glaring at me, I wished I was a bookkeeper.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. But first, here it is almost the end of February. All over the country, people are thinking about their new cars. All but one man. And he remains quite content with his old automobile and wearing apparel, an ancient Maxwell and a well-worn toupee. For these reasons, and for several others, named Mary, Dennis, Don, Phil, and Rochester, he now has the number one comedy show in America. All over the country, people think about him, too, every Sunday night. Hear the Jack Benny Show with Claude Rains as Jack's special guest next Sunday on all these same CBS network stations. And now, back to yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
The men with the guns, described from left to right, were a fat man with three chins and a bald dome, and with him, a punk with a sneer and arms that were too long for the rest of them. A gun muzzled me into a chair and started making anything but sense.
Very well, Sandler, my dear. We are at last face to face with the mysterious stranger, Johnny Dollar.
Oh, don't kill the suspense and tell me why.
He knows why. He came to the Wardlow bar. He knew about Frank Moore, and he was looking for the other one, Harrison. That is why I phoned you.
Well, it would seem then that this unfortunate chain of events is nearing the final link.
Yeah, this guy uses his head better than Harrison did.
Well, Dollar?
I'm using my head right now.
Splendid, splendid. So doing, you may well prevent Harrison's death as well as your own.
Oh, well, that's better than nothing. But is that all you can offer?
Skip the bargaining, Rustline. Takes too much time.
Quiet, Corgi. The times when money is cheaper than the results of your kind of blind violence. Well, Dollar, you do have a price.
Take a tip from my last name. Start bidding.
I tell you, you're nuts, Rustline. You aren't sure he knows where it is.
He must know. He was looking for Harrison. They both know.
You'll be quiet, both of you. £500 English dollar. Where is it?
At times like this, I keep my mouth shut and my ears open.
750. Surely, Dollar, since you've entered the situation at such a late date, that is profit enough.
Oh, well, I'm a man of expensive tastes. I've always aspired to such things as $200 cigarette lighters.
Go ahead. Keep spitting out that wise talk and you'll be spitting out teeth. How'd you like to go swimming with your hands and feet tied?
I could bite my tongue.
not yet, Corgi, my boy. This man is worthless, dead. Perhaps, Dolly, we can induce you to talk in much the same way as we could prepare a parrot by slitting the tongue.
You know, Rosalind, your mother must have been scared by Sidney Greenstreet.
Why, you...
Either this guy is nuts or he doesn't know anything.
What I know would fill a police blotter.
Okay. You know nothing of psychology, my boy. What this man is attempting to pass off as a show of bravery is based purely on the knowledge that he is, momentarily at least, of some considerable value to us alive. Now, Dollar, be careful. Before you make your final decision, bear in mind you've heard our final offer. Now, sir, what should it be?
Oh, the squirrel said to the little girl when she asked him what he wanted for Christmas, nuts.
Very well, Dollar. Corgi.
Thanks.
I finally came to in the dark, trussed up like a turkey, and lay there trying to figure it out. Obviously, the two rude dudes thought I knew something I didn't know. But what I did know was that finding Harrison had turned into a big, fat headache. Also, that I had accomplished exactly nothing towards speeding the SS Shanghai Wayfarer over the bounding main. While I was comforting myself by repeating over and over that old insurance company soother, never say die, I discovered I wasn't alone.
Hello.
Huh?
You, who are you?
Well, you were here first, you tell me.
Well, my name is Harrison.
Harrison?
Yes, who are you?
I'm Johnny Dollar. I was sent out here by the Oriental West Cargo Bonding Company.
Oriental West?
Yes, I was supposed to do what you couldn't get done. And look at me now. Getting hit over the head and dumped in here must be par for the course. How long you been here, and why?
I've been driving myself crazy trying to figure that out.
Well, this little guest house, wherever we are, must only have one set of proprietors. I can tell you who they are, at least by the names they're using tonight. Rosalind and Corgi. They offer me 750 English pounds to tell them where something called It was. What is It?
What's a package? What's in it? I don't know. It belonged to the chief engineer of the Shanghai Wayfarer, Frank Moore. He was helping me try to get the ship on its way, and I owed him a favor. He asked me to drop this package at a bar, the
Wardlow bar. Yeah, go ahead.
That's right. I was supposed to give it to a girl named Chandra. She wasn't there, so I got her address and went out to her place.
You mean that package is at Chandra's house?
Yes. When I got out there, the Chinese maid let me in. I waited as long as I could, and then rather than leave what might be a valuable package just lying around loose, I put it into the bottom drawer of a dresser and left.
Oh, great. For such things, I go around laying down my life.
Well, it's obvious that these men will stop at nothing to get their hands on that package.
Well, when they asked you where it was, why didn't you tell them? Then neither one of us would be here. What's more, I'm beginning to think the sooner they get the package, the sooner our ship sails.
Frank Moore had been a good friend to me. He wanted Chandler to have it, and I couldn't just turn it over to those two.
Well, I've got some news for you. And this should make you really unhappy. Those two happen to be in business with Chandra. Huh? They're all on the same team. She's one of them.
What an idiot I've been.
Well, here we are, all roped up. You know, for a pair of guys who came out here to speed a shipload of raw tin on its way, we're doing just dandy. We're lucky if we get out of this thing alive. Offhand, I'd say our host probably murdered Frank Moore trying to get that package. Maybe we're next. Uh-oh. Maybe right now. A beam from a powerful flashlight stabbed us in the eyes. The sudden change from too much dark to too much light kept us blinded.
Well, look who's here.
At least the voice behind the glare wasn't Rosalind's and it wasn't Corgi's. But it was a familiar voice, one I'd heard and heard lately. He walked in on us, the flash in one hand and in the other, a knife with a 6-inch blade. At first I wondered whether it was the one that had been buried in Frank Moore's back. And then I remembered where I'd seen it before. The man bending over us was the burly gangway watch from the Shanghai Wayfarer.
And you told me to watch out for pirates.
Well, this situation is getting a little overcrowded. I didn't think there was room for any more. What do you want?
You know what I want, Dollar. The same thing Rosalind and Corgi are ripping your hotel room apart for right now.
Now, don't tell me you're looking for it, too. Two things I know about that package, mister.
The name is Rourke.
Okay, Rourke. One thing I know is that it's dangerous company. The other is I want no part of it. The only thing I'm interested in is getting the Shanghai Wayfarer out of port.
That won't be hard once I get that package. Where is it, Dollar?
I'll trade the answer to that question for a little freedom.
Okay, hold still.
Thanks. Harrison's next. I want him with us in case he's lying.
All right. Okay, Harrison, roll over.
Hey, you!
When Rourke bent over Harrison, I drop-kicked the flashlight out of his hand, ran across the darkened room, through the open door, and kept on running. Sometimes the long way around is the shortest way home, so I headed for Chandra's house. I not only had some getting even to do, but I had some curiosity to satisfy. Somehow the Shanghai Wayfarer's failure to sail on schedule was tied up with a mysterious package. But how? Why? I decided I'd earn the right to see what was in that package.
Johnny!
I didn't want you to be lonely. I heard your playmates are over making themselves at home in my room, so I thought you and I could have a little chat. Maybe I've got a surprise for you.
What, Johnny?
I think I know where that package is.
Johnny! You get that package. We both don't worry for the rest of our lives. But we must hurry before Rosalind and Corgi come back. We go now.
Okay, where's your bedroom?
Johnny, what do you mean?
Oh, come on, where is it?
Come, I'll show you. No, it cannot be. It's another one,
no. It's been here all the time. And now while I open this thing, you can go and have yourself a nervous breakdown. Say, this is more fun than unwrapping Christmas presents. And now I take off the cover. Wow. Now I know how the winner feels on Hit the Jackpot. The package was paper all the way through. Brown wrapping on the outside and green spending on the inside. Big bundles of fresh, clean American 20s. Thousands of the same kind of bills that the Singapore police had found in the late Frank Moore's wallet. It would have taken half a day to count it, and I'd wasted too much time already.
There'd be no good to you without me, Johnny. You have to know how to get rid of them.
Oh, counterfeit, huh?
Yes. They are made in China. Frank Moore brought them from Shanghai to Rosalind to take to the States, but Rosalind was not here in Singapore. He was late, so Frank had to make some accidents happen to his ship to keep it from sailing. But then he changed his mind. He decided he would give the money himself, but Rosalind caught up with him.
Oh, I see. He was sending them to you by way of Harrison, just before he was knifed by Rosalind, huh? Who talked him into that? You, by any chance?
You and I could be very rich, Johnny.
You never give up, do you?
$500,000 there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that should buy about 50 years in jail. I'm taking this down to customs and you're with it.
No, I do not think you do.
Uh-huh. Time to play another visiting team. Come on, beautiful. I don't want you in the way.
Let go of me.
I grabbed her, lashed her wrist with a cord from the package, and since she liked money so much, I stuffed her mouth with a fistful of those troublesome $20 bills. I locked her and the rest of the loot into a closet and dashed into the other room looking for a weapon. And then I remembered that Louisville slugger from the U.S. Marines. I was glad they'd landed. I grabbed it off the wall, got a toehold in the carpet on the left side of that door, wrapped my fingers around the bat, swung it on the back of my shoulder, and waited.
Thunder, my dear, we just came...
Two out and one to go. Three outs and the side is retired. What a ball game. Now, first, I take your guns. And now we sit and wait for you to wake up.
I'll take over from here on in, Dollar.
Huh? Oh, I don't know about that, Rourke. I happen to be the guy who has the gun.
Oh? Well, here. Take a look at this.
What's in your wallet that I want to look at? More hot 20s? I'm not taking my eyes off you, Rourke.
Okay, I'll turn around with my hands up and then you can look at it.
Okay, fair enough. But if you so much as move, I'll start shooting.
That's the deal.
Oh, it's a fine time to learn this.
Are you satisfied?
John Joseph Rourke, U.S. Treasury Department. Come on in.
I'm sorry I couldn't come out into the open before, Dollar, but I was too close to the payoff of this case to take any chances.
Well, you know, I'm beginning to think that just being in this town is taking chances.
That counterfeit's been funneling through this port on its way from China for months. We had Moore staked out for a long time, but this is the first shot we had at the top. That's him lying there on the floor, Roslin. Now I've got him. Oh, your pal Harrison told me where I can find the only other thing I need, that package of hot money in the dresser drawer.
Oh, it's now moved into the bedroom closet. Along with a package of hot woman.
Well, then, Dollar, it looks like my job out here is just about done.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, wait a minute.
Hmm?
You're from the Treasury Department.
Yes?
Well, then, after you get all these birds into their cages, how about helping me make out my income tax? Expense account, item 6. Hotel bill, one night in Singapore, $5. Item 7... One new outfit, replacing mine, which was ruined in course of taking midnight dip in Singapore River, $200. Item 8, $20. Bar checks for cheering up one William Harrison, your expediter, whose innocence had him running errands for the man who was holding up the departure of your ship. Item 9, $375, spent while killing time until the departure of my plane back to the States. After the Shanghai Wayfarer finally sailed. You see, this time, I had 4 hours on my hands instead of the 2 you allowed me in San Francisco. Expense account total, $1,407. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
In just a moment, we'll tell you about next week's Johnny Dollar Adventure. But first, for more exciting drama in the mystery and adventure line, remember CBS 2 thrill-packed Saturday night shows, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe and Gangbusters. Be sure to hear Philip Marlowe and Gangbusters tomorrow night on most of these same CBS network stations. Next week, CBS will take you adventuring with Johnny Dollar, hitting the hot spots in Palm Beach and New Orleans, with the star of Hades, Diamond, on a trip all points south. Charles Russell plays the role of Johnny. Our music is composed and conducted by Mark Warnow. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is written by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd, and is produced and directed by Richard Sandville for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour. We broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. Subscribe for free on Podbean or iTunes. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and now we continue our detective series with a mystery about an American dame that Johnny Dollar must track down. Here is yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Search for Michelle Marsh, first broadcast September 25th, 1949, on CBS.
Girl, they may have plenty of blue blood in Boston, but from what I just saw, they've got plenty of the other kind, too. This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At insurance investigation, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he is an absolute genius. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Tri-State Life and Casualty Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during my search for your missing policyholder, Miss Michelle March. Or, she came in like a lion and went out on the lamb. Or, she should have been banned in Boston. Expense account item one, $2.85. Railroad transportation, Hartford to Boston. Expense account item two, $1.80. Cab fare to the corner of Longwood and Huntington Avenues, a half block from the apartment house that was Miss March's last known address. Boston may be called the cradle of liberty, but somebody else got rocked to sleep that morning on Longwood. The shot came from two carbines and two men in one light tan club coupe parked across the street. I waited long enough to memorize the license number as the pot rotted out of there, and then I headed for the victim. My heart was pounding, but not from exercise. He'd been sprayed coming out of a doorway that, in another 20 seconds, I would have been going in. But the coincidence didn't stop there. Take it easy now, will you? We'll get you some help. You know who did it?
March.
What? I didn't get you.
Tell him. He's asked. What's happening? March.
Michelle March. Well, that's who I'm looking for. What's she got to do with it? Can you hear me? What's Michelle March got to do with it? Come on now, cry. I wonder if I should have stayed in Hartford.
I just shooting gallery. I was inside the shop, and brother, that's where I stayed. Hey, Mr. How is he? Can you tell?
Yeah. Let's just say you don't need to stand back to give him air. He can't use it. While the two limelight-happy characters from the crowd argued about who was going to notify the police, I disappeared from the scene by way of that desk doorway, pausing inside just long enough to learn from the buzzer panel that Michelle March's apartment number was, unluckily, 213. I didn't bother to look for the apartment house manager. I didn't even bother to pick the lock. I put my shoulder to work on the door. It was an easy apartment to search, but it didn't offer anything to find. The only thing even faintly resembling a lead I found on the floor behind the bureau. A book of matches that advertised Boston's best bar by far, Flannery, with an address on Washington Street. About then, I decided that rather than being found at the scene of breaking and entering, I'd look up the police at the scene of murder.
Oh, who are you there? What have you got to say about this?
Well, not much, Lieutenant. Shot from across the street by two men in a fan club coupe. Probably stolen. License number, Massachusetts, 3R165. Weapons were carbines, 30 caliber army issue.
You sure of all that?
Yeah. Here, this will tell you why I make it a habit to be sure of things.
Oh. Dollar. Insurance investigator.
Uh-huh.
Hartman. Well, in a way, that makes two of you.
Huh?
I'm Lieutenant Val Dollar.
Sergeant Major.
The dead man was a local detective. Private license, good business, and a bad reputation.
Name of?
Something I can't pass out right now.
Well, look, here's why I'm interested, Lieutenant. If Friend Detective was our case, he could have been hired to find the same party I was hired to find. And since he was blasted at said party's last known address, it could be that somebody doesn't want said party found, which paints an interesting but gloomy picture of my future.
Who is this said party?
A girl, Michelle March, reported a missing persons in New York yesterday by a worried sister, who is also the beneficiary of a $25,000 insurance policy owned by Miss March. The insurers, Tri-State Life, got the report from missing persons and hired me to find her.
You think she's dead?
I'll tell you when I find her.
Yeah. Now, what makes you think the deceased might have been looking for her, too?
Because he mentioned her name just before he went bye-bye.
What are you saying, Dollar? Just in case we need you.
Cartwright Hotel. Now, look, Lieutenant. You've got a murder and I've got a missing person. You can loaf if you want to, but I'm eager. I want to talk to the apartment house manager. Any objections?
No. Go right ahead, Dolly. Good luck to you.
I am over this, Mr. Dollar. I've managed rooming houses for over 30 years in Boston, some very nice ones, too. This is the first murder I've ever had. Oh, why did fate point at me?
Fate didn't point, Mrs. Macy. The gentleman was knocked off because he was involved with one of your tenants.
Oh, that's impossible. I tried so hard. References, my own personal observation.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, Mrs. Macy. In fact, the more personal your observations were, the gladder I'll be.
Well, it isn't that I snooped, Mr. Dollar.
Of course not, Mrs. Macy.
Who was it?
Michelle March, 213.
Oh, she's a lovely girl. But her habits were quite irregular. Often came in late.
Oh. I understand she hasn't been staying in her apartment for the past 2 weeks. Do you know where she went?
Why, no, but I did happen to be just outside her door when she came out with a suitcase and her gentleman caller. Her employer, I believe she said. Something about some work they had to do in the country.
Uh-huh. She leave a forwarding address?
She had little reason to do that. Why, all the time she's been here, the only letter she's gotten is from somebody in Chicago. One a month. A man, I'd say, from the penmanship. Did I get one this month, though?
Do you, by any chance, remember what those letters said?
Oh, you young upstart. I'm only trying to help.
I know, Mrs. Macy. You're a lovable old gossip. After Mrs. Macy chased me out of her apartment, I questioned some of Michelle's second-floor neighbors. What they gave me only augmented the story I already had. She hadn't been seen in the company of anyone for 4 or 5 months, until dapper, medium-build, and swarthy took over. All of them had seen him. None of them knew his name. But they all agreed he was the guy Michelle March had marched away with. Everything I learned added up to a dame getting tired of waiting for somebody in Chicago and ducking out with somebody else. It would have looked that simple if it hadn't been for that detective who had so recently taken up new headquarters in the city morgue. Expense account, item 3, $4.75, drinks and dinner. After which, expense account, item 4, $180, taxi ride. Taken on the strength of the weak clue I found on Michelle's apartment floor, the match folder from Boston's best bar by far. Flannery's look like they wouldn't want to know how old you are, but how many stretches and in what prison. Above a row of greasy bottles, the wall behind the bar was covered with pictures of fighters, right from old John L. up to Rocky Graziano. But none of them looked as brutal as the 8 or 10 gorillas who had their feet on the brass rail. I decided this was no place to ask for a lady, so I asked for a drink.
Yeah.
Straight rye. Double.
You've never been in before. Where are you from?
I'm trying to forget. Has, Blackie been around lately?
Who's Blackie?
Well, maybe that's not his full name. It's the one I knew him by. He wore a lot of sharp suits, you know, about medium build, dark, swarthy.
That could be anybody. Now, drink your drink, pay for it, and move along.
Now, wait a minute. Now, I haven't got anything against the guy. I'm looking for a dame that's with him, see? What's the freeze for?
I need the room. Expecting a private crowd. Now, beat it.
Time off, Flannery.
Oh,
maybe I want to talk to these guys.
I'll see you there, Flannery.
Yeah, look. Oh, Joe, I'll see you.
I'll get close. look up again if I get any more trouble this week. Take him outside, Roxy, huh?
Shut up!
What is Niles' name you're looking for?
Michelle March. You know her?
Yeah. Let's go someplace and talk.
Thanks for the invitation, but... Let go of the arm. You'll get gangrene when the circulation is cut off.
Sorry. Come on.
What makes you so upset about the lost Michelle?
What do you want with Louis Marine?
Louis Marine? If he's the guy she's with, all I want him to do is to point her out.
You and me might get along at that. It'd be worth plenty to...
Look out! Get this bike! Hey! The car they were in was different, but those carbines sounded the same. I rubbed my nose raw, trying to bury my head in that sidewalk. I knew they had to empty those carbines sometime, but instead of sounding better, it started to sound worse. I twisted my head, shot a look at the street, saw one of the attackers in the process of falling out of one of the windows of the gun car. Closed my eyes again and realized why they never let my kind of insurance investigator be a policyholder. I'd been sent to find a missing girl, and there I was in the middle of another Boston massacre.
You're listening to Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Charles Russell.
It took a full 20 seconds after the smoke of battle had started to clear for me to realize that I'd been saved by the arrival of fire support from an unexpected source, the police. I looked around for my new friend and brother target, Roxy, but he had disappeared. A wave of suspicion broke over my flow of thought with this question. How did it happen that all those cops with all those guns just happened to be in all those hiding places waiting for those gunmen to drive up and open up? Answer, a hunter's stew like that usually calls for a pigeon. I didn't feel like flying, but I did, straight back to my hotel, with one landing and a newsstand. An evening paper gave me everything else I needed, except the feathers. But I wasn't exactly cooing when I got to my hotel room phone and put a call through to the Boston police.
South Precinct, Sergeant Miller.
Give me Lieutenant Bill in homicide.
One moment. Homicide, Lieutenant Bill.
This is Dollar, Lieutenant.
Oh, Dollar, sure. I'm glad to hear from you.
I'll have your badge for this.
What? What did you say?
The evening paper. Quote, Boston private detective, whose name has been withheld by police, was slain today, presumably to stop his search for a missing girl. It was learned by this paper from reliable sources.
Oh, now, Dollar.
That another investigator still alive has joined the hunt for the girl.
Well, I...
Johnny Dollar, well-known Hartford insurance sleuth, checked into room 705 at the Cartwright Hotel today. Well, you want more?
Why, I can't understand it. I told the boys not to say a word.
I think the boys didn't.
Oh, now, see here. A man would have to stoop pretty low to use methods like that.
You probably touch your toes every morning for practice. Well, I hope you got the results of your stakeout in front of Flannery's. We got two hot carbines and a hot car. The evidence that could have talked, those gunmen, are so full of police lead that your only chance of learning anything now is to find somebody strong enough to pick them up and write with them.
Now, wait a minute, Dollar.
You know who hired them?
Well, I'll find out.
When you get confused, check with me. I think I know. Now, do I get the name of that private detective, the deceased?
Well, I don't see any harm. Bernard Knight.
Hired by?
Well, all right, Dollar. If you'll cooperate, I will. According to his files, he was hired by Roxy Morris to find the girl. Now, who hired the gunman?
I think, but don't know, that they were hired by a gent named Louis Marine to stop Roxy Morris from finding Michelle March. Why? We'll have more about that later. But if you'll put a search on that pair of names, I'll look for a good night's sleep. And after that sidewalk, it was easy to find. Huh? Hmm? Oh, Boston. Oh, hello.
Good morning.
Hello, is this Mr. Dollar?
Wait a minute until I pick you up off the floor. Who is this?
Is this Mr. Dollar?
Yeah, it is.
Well, this is Michelle March.
Huh? Oh, well, good morning, Michelle. I've been looking for you.
That's why I called. I read that you were hired by my insurance company.
Yeah, that's right. They don't like disappearing policyholders.
Well, let me tell you this. If they want to save the money, they'll have to pay for me. Stop looking for me.
What are you afraid of? That Roxy Morris will follow me?
What do you know about Roxy?
Does he like to find you and Louis Marine?
What'd he tell you?
Oh, what counts is that I filled in what he didn't tell me. Namely, that he was in Chicago for a year, and you were supposed to be waiting for him in this fatal apartment on Longwood Avenue. But instead, Louis Marine landed, took the situation well in hand, and captured you for himself.
You're just trying to sound surprised, aren't you?
If it fits, keep it on approval. Now, the point is, there are too many people looking for you to stay lost. Where can I meet you?
How do I know I can trust you? I can't trust anybody.
Look, I'm still working for the insurance company, so my greatest interest is keeping you alive, not selling you out.
What about the police?
My promises aren't equipped with lifetime guarantees, but I'll do what I can. If you tell all, and if the story is big enough, they should be willing to make a deal.
It's big, all right. It'll clear something out of their books that's been there for a year.
Where do I meet you?
You know where Charlestown is?
Oh, I know it's part of Boston.
Take the subway and get off at City Square. An hour from now. I'll be in a bar. The gangplank. On Chelsea. Near the Navy Yard.
Okay, sweetie. I'll be there. Up until now, whoever's been doing the shooting has used everything but battleships. Even though Michelle's story sounded like trap bait, cheesy indeed, I had to take a chance. I dove into a cab and had the cab drive into the top of Hanover Street and down to Boston's North End. Playing quiz games with strangers in that section is called take it or lump it. But a few well-placed 20s led me to a neighborhood undertaker who had the officially unproved reputation of creating a large demand for his own services. We swapped donations. I gave him $50 and he gave me a large out of the corner of his mouthful.
Listen to me good. About a year ago, the laws picked up Roxy Morris on a suspicion. They had a good idea. He's a heist of the 75G payroll. But there were no witnesses. He didn't leave none. Roxy knew they'd watch him, so he hightailed it out of town. But he didn't detect the loot with him. The boys around here got it back on the grapevine. He was suffering from the shorts. So everybody figured he had the dough stashed away somewhere right around here.
Is that all? Has he got anything else to tell me?
Yes. Goodbye.
I didn't like the way that undertaker said goodbye. I legged it up to the subway station marked Union, went down in and caught a train for Charlestown. Once the city square, a three-block walk down Chelsea Street produced the gangplank bar, which in turn produced that nose-bruising smell which comes from slopping beer on sawdust. Out of place in the place sat Michelle March. She was a good looker with a bad look. And if I had been Roxy Morris, I would have elected her the last National Bank. I plopped into a booth beside her. She turned her head my way, looked me straight in the kisser, blew a smoke ring at me, and popped two words through it.
You Dollar?
Yep, I'm Dollar. You March?
I'm Michelle March.
Well, so far so good. It's nice hearing you breathe. That means Tri-State Insurance can keep its nice $25,000.
Only if you keep me this way, Mr. Dollar. And that might prove to be a difficult thing to do.
Oh, maybe not so difficult.
Why not?
Well, you indicated yourself that your magnetic personality might suddenly attract a few steel jacket bullets. That means there'll have to be somebody to pull the trigger. So all I have to do is to sit around and see who tries to take a shot at the target. You. And we've got our man.
It's not that easy. I'm in trouble three ways. And it's hard to see three ways at once.
Look, I know all about Roxy Morris. He swiped $75,000 and gave it to you to mine.
You don't know the half of it. 2 months after Roxy was gone, a guy named Louis Marine came to me with a story that Roxy had sent for $20,000. I gave it to him. Then he told me that Roxy had never sent for him. And that if I squawked, he'd convince Roxy that I'd fallen in love with him and just given him the money. say the battery's tip off the police. He had me going and coming.
Nice fellow.
He wouldn't leave me alone. He made me give him 15,000 more of Roxy's money. And 2 weeks ago, I got word through to Roxy in Chicago. He blew up. Turned on me. I've been running from him ever since. He wants his 75,000, all of it. And I haven't got it.
Oh, seems like you've been taking chances all the way. Now, you know what I want you to do?
No, what?
Take one more. I told Michelle what I had in mind for her, during the next few hours at least, and grabbed a cab back across the bridge into the North End. Expense account item 5, $50. Another donation to my expensive undertaker. This time I paid him for talking, but not to me. Then I took over the telephone and dialed my way through to the guy to whom I was about to give a chance of becoming the ding-dong daddy of the Boston Police Force, Lieutenant Bell.
Yes, Dollar, this is Lieutenant Bell.
Bell, how would you like to get the goods on Roxy Mars?
Well, I'd like it fine.
Okay. And along with that, how'd you like to pin a receiving stolen property rap on Louis Marie?
I hope you aren't just being salty, Dollar.
No, I'm not, Lieutenant. Now, look. You may have to do some trading with a gal on this deal.
Yeah?
You may have to promise her some time off for verbal good behavior.
Well, such things are possible. All right, what's the pitch?
Listen, I have baited a tall, thin granite trap for Roxy Morris and Louis Marine. The bait is Roxy's ex-girlfriend, Michelle March.
Okay, what then?
I had a tip to call Roxy Morris and tell her that Louis Marine was meeting Michelle at a certain place at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
I also had Mr. Blabbermouth call Louis Marine and tell him that Michelle is meeting Roxy at the same time and the same place.
What?
I had him tell each of the gentlemen that Michelle was meeting the other one with what's left of the money in cash.
Oh, you started a war, Dollar. Oh, but if it does the trick, it's worth it. All right, what's my move?
First, call the place where I've arranged a surprise party and tell them to get rid of the public.
But
also tell them to let a girl named Michelle March come and go as she pleases. Also me.
Oh, don't tell me you've set this thing up in a public place. Where is it?
Lieutenant Bell, yes. What I want is for those two characters to run up a blind alley. And when I say up, oh, brother, they got the word that Michelle meeting would be held at the top of the Bunker Hill Monument.
Oh, no.
And you might remember what General Preston almost said. Don't fire till you see the red in their eyes. I was back in Charlestown and at the base of the Bunker Hill Monument at 2:45. The door of the museum at the bottom was open, but a state park officer stood by its side. I told him who I was, and he nodded me through the bronze doors. Officer, did Miss March get here?
Yes, sir, young man. She went up the shaft.
Well, look, can I run the elevator myself?
I bet it's any elevator. Just step 200 to 300.
Oh. Ow, this may be going to heaven the hard way, but here goes. Halfway up the winding granite stairs, I yelled for Michelle. But she either didn't hear me or just didn't want to answer. I kept going and hoping. As I came closer to the top, I tried yelling again. Still no answer. Finally, I made it. Up into the observation landing at the top. Michelle was there. She still wouldn't talk, but she had written me a note. Beside her crumpled figure was a vial that hadn't been filled with perfume. The note was short and to the point. Dear Johnny Dollar, I still want to help, but I hadn't better be around here alive when everybody gets here. And it was signed Michelle. As I bent over to see what kind of bye-bye medicine she'd taken, I heard something that might mean a sudden dose of lead to the head for me. Either Morris or Marine had landed, and then I was stuck at the top with the bait that had suckered them into a trap, which suddenly turned out to be mine. Waiting up there in that tiny room for death to come get me would have killed me anyway, so I started down. With the pounding of my heart and my own steps on the granite blocks, I heard the pitter-patter of anything but tiny feet come charging up a narrow staircase. Whoever was coming up and I both slowed down. But my heart didn't. And I crept around a curve and my eyes went to a head-on collision with a pair staring back.
What are you doing here?
I'm a tourist, Roxy.
You may be right, white guy. You may be taking a trip. Who's up there?
Up there? Oh, I don't know who they are. Just some girl with a guy she keeps calling Louie.
Okay. Let me by.
Don't try anything.
Roxy Morris tagged me with a butt of a .32 going by. But lying there with my head against the cold granite inside wall of the monument brought me back. And conscious was a very dangerous condition for me to be in. Because charging up the stairs came another pair of unfriendly feet that couldn't have belonged to anybody but Louis Marine.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
Well, up until somebody hit me on the head, I was killing Roxy Morris and his girl.
They're up there?
Sure, Louis. Yeah, they're up there.
Then let me by. Come on. Get up out of my way.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead. Bye.
Yeah. But wait a minute. I got an idea. Come on, chum. Ahead of me. Up you go. You can account for me. Move!
Louis had a gun at my back, and Roxy had one waiting for me up front. We took the last few steps up to the top real quiet-like. When my eyes came level to the floor of the observation room, Roxy was bending over Michelle, but he snapped up in a hurry, and his right hand was loaded with heat. Louis pushed me ahead of him, up and in. I stood there between them, listening to them grind their teeth at each other, with one foot under Michelle's arm. Then I got two big shocks. A scream from Michelle just before she snatched my legs out from under me. Hey, what are you doing alive?
I don't know. I guess I didn't take enough.
Well, whatever you're doing alive, I'll tell you one thing. Your two boyfriends sure took care of each other. Come on, let me get you out of here. Oh, I didn't think I'd be able to carry me down all those stairs. Now I have to carry you. Expense account, item 6, $20. City Hospital, having Michelle's stomach pumped out. And the way Michelle took my suggestion that she voluntarily turn herself over to the police was very good. Lieutenant Bell was very cooperative. Otherwise, I might let it be known that the reason that he didn't show up on time to help me in the 1949 Battle of Bunker Hill was because he forgot to reset his watch at the end of daylight saving time. He showed up for our 3 o'clock appointment at 4. Expense account total, yeah, $786.00. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes and stars Charles Russell with script by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd. Featured in the cast were Bill Boucher, Myra Marsh, Dick Ryan, Larry Dobkin, Charles Seal, and Dorothy Lovett. The special music is written and conducted by Leith Stevens. Be sure to be with us next Saturday, October 1st, when another unusual expense account is handed in by...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
That's right. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, will be heard on Saturday evenings starting next Saturday. And look at who's going to be here at the same time on Sundays. The world's most famous blockhead, Charlie McCarthy, accompanied by a man who shadows him closely as Johnny shadows the suspect, Edgar Bergen. Yes, Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen have joined the great parade of stars to CBS, along with Jack Benny, Amos and Andy, Horace Hite, and Red Skelton, whose show starts next Saturday, or rather next Sunday also. Don't miss the first hilarious appearance of Charlie and Bergen on most of these same CBS stations at the same time next Sunday night and every Sunday thereafter. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Thank you so much for joining us this week on the Old Time Radio Hour. Each week we bring you wonderful examples of the magic of old time radio, and we hope you find time to tune in again next week for more Johnny Dollar. I think you'll enjoy hearing how the series changed with a new creator and star and a format of 75 minutes presented over 5 days of 15-minute episodes. The expanded time let them explore characters and themes that made for some very exciting radio drama. Tune in next week and see what we've found. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying, so long for a while.